Welcome to the Wizz Air third quarter results conference call. Throughout the call, all participants will be in a listen-only mode, and afterwards, there will be a question and answer session. Just to remind you, this conference call is being recorded. Today, I'm pleased to present CEO József Váradi. Please begin your meeting.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining this conference. Let me start sort of giving you a few highlights how the quarter was developing and what's in front of us going forward. Yet again, we are announcing a record quarter, record passenger numbers, 7.1 million passengers, and record revenue, 423 million euros. We continue to invest in growth. We delivered 24% passenger growth in the quarter. That's pretty high at any standard. Clearly, we are putting capacity back into the market, what we intended to park, given the off-season and the low season period, resulting from some of the consolidation events happening across Europe, in the United Kingdom, but also in continental Europe. We remain disciplined on cost management. We delivered ex-fuel cost flat, despite a number of headwinds, clearly on infrastructure cost, on labor, on fuel. We've seen quite a bit of headwinds, but at the same time, the rollout of the A321 aircraft has helped us offset at least some of it. The A321 rollout is very important going forward as well. At the end of the financial year in March, we will have 33% of the capacity flown on A321s. A year later, March 2019, we'll have 44% of the seats flown on A321s. We completed the transaction for our largest ever aircraft order, 146 A321neo aircraft. We just issued a communication yesterday with regard to obtaining shareholders' approval for the transaction. Now this deal is done and dusted. We made major announcements with regard to expanding our business in London, at London Luton Airport, and entering the Vienna market, obviously taking advantage of the changing market circumstances. We acquired four airport nightstands at Luton from Monarch, and as a result, very quickly, we've been able to scale up our operations from an intended three aircraft to seven aircraft already going into the summer period. As you know, we are in the process of licensing our U.K. airline, Wizz Air UK, and we are expecting to receive the necessary operating licenses during the course of March, in line with our plan. Essentially, what we are doing in London Luton will be a Wizz Air U.K. operation. We also announced the opening on Vienna, taking advantage of the Air Berlin Niki situation, and quite robustly, we're gonna be starting our venture there with three aircraft opening 17 routes during the course of 2018. Also importantly, we launched the Wizz Air Pilot Academy. Just for your perspective, we are expecting to hire over 300 pilots each year in the next five years, and we are expecting to deliver around 150 cadets, young pilots, through the Wizz Pilot Academy program when it's scaled up. We've already inducted over 100 cadets into this program. Quite a lot of growth in front of us. We are seeing the remainder of the current financial year as well as fiscal 2019 as a continuation of our growth strategy, similar level, and we are just about to start our largest ever delivery program. We're gonna be taking delivery of 17 aircraft over 17 weeks, starting on the 1st of March. We think we are ready operationally to go through that process and induct all those aircraft. If you take the next slide, we are the largest low-cost carrier in Central and Eastern Europe, and obviously, the growth that we have delivered and we continue to deliver keeps enhancing our leadership position there. As said, we are up 24% on passengers, 7.1 million. We have a fleet of 88 aircraft currently in operation. This is 14 more than same time last year. We continue to add airports to the network and open up new countries. And we opened up bases also. We reshuffled bases, we reshuffled capacity. We've also made announcements on closing some of the smaller bases in order to spring capacity for a bigger strategic play as opportunities arose during the period. And obviously with that capacity growth, we keep building our organizational capacity and we have 3,500 employees as we speak. And despite delivering that high growth, and moving on to the next slide, the performance metrics remained intact. We operated 18% more flights. Utilization remained unchanged during the period, over 12 hours of utilization. Load factor increased over a percent, 1.4% to 89.4%. And regulatory and the punctuality matrix slightly deteriorated, but largely remained the same as in the period last year. And we were big time affected by weather conditions in December, just in the United Kingdom. We had to cancel over 100 flights because effectively the country became unoperational almost for 2 days. So while in the period we cancelled 57 flights last year, we were forced to cancel 209 flights this year, predominantly driven by weather factors. But I can also confirm it to you that it was not driven by pilot shortage or anything like that. So with that note, I would just hand it over to Ian, who's going to take you through the financial performance of the business.
Thanks, Joseph. I think in the context of the growth that Joseph just described, we were very happy with the financial performance of the third quarter. The first half, if you remember, we delivered 282 million euros of profit. We've delivered 14 million euros of profit in the third quarter, taking us to 303 million euros of profit for the 9 months. This is a fantastic platform to essentially accelerate the growth, which is Joe's described, and we'll give a little bit more color on the fleet later. So seat growth was up 22.4%. A slightly higher load stage length to 1,600 kilometres. ASK growth was up 22.6%. Load factors were also up, and passenger growth up 24%. All this flows through to higher revenue, 24%, so delivering 422.9 million euros in the third quarter. Notwithstanding this growth, it is pleasing to report that costs remain very tightly controlled, so delivering on an ex-fuel CASK flat is a good performance. We are guiding broadly flat CASK for the full year, so you'll appreciate that we'll be looking for an even better performance going into the fourth quarter, so that number will start turning negative, a negative performance in the fourth quarter, which on the back of the growth, again, I think will be a very, very good performance. We've also guided slightly positive revenue environment, so the RASK, as you can see in the third quarter, notwithstanding this growth profile, we're able to deliver a 1.3% increase in the RASK performance. I think it's also very important to, when you look at RASK and make some conclusions yourself, is bear in mind that CEE is at a very different stage of evolution to that of Western Europe. So what we're seeing in the CEE, we can come on to later, is still a very strong economic backdrop, a serious amount of opportunities to continue the stimulation. So the revenue environment, we want to grow this business as fast as we possibly can and maintain flat margins. So maintaining a flat CASK, driving those costs even lower through with the A321, so revenue is not, we're not revenue chasers, we're cost chasers. Maybe moving on to the next slide, just to highlight a couple of points. Within 2 years on the fleet side, over 50%, 54% of our fleet will be supplied with A321s, and bearing in mind the A321 is delivering 10% lower unit costs. With the NEOs, our first NEO will be coming Jan 19. We're very confident of the delivery of that aircraft. The fuel savings on those aircraft, hopefully they'll be even better than our expectations. So the NEOs and the A321s will be driving certainly our costs even lower and driving the revenue line higher. I think it's worth highlighting at this point on the ancillary. So maybe one of the negative notes of the quarter is the ancillary, a slight decline. If you remember the first half, we delivered a plus 1.8 euros per pax in the first half. This was a strong performance. In the third quarter, in October, we changed our paid-for cabin bag policy. We still need to refine that. Essentially, we've been having a bit of a challenge over the past few years of improving the cabin bags. Basically, people don't want to pay for bags. And the challenge the industry faces across all markets is that essentially these aircraft aren't structured to take one bag per passenger. So an A320 can probably only take about 100 bags versus 180 seats. So I think this is a challenge the industry has. It's something that we will be improving on. I think the positive note is the value add was up 2.6. The value add was up €2 per pax for the quarter, but the bag declined 2.6, so we delivered a minus 0.6. For the full year, though, we'll still be in positive territory, and I think for your models, the target should always be €1 per pax per year, and that's what we'll be aiming for going into fiscal 19. I think on the economic backdrop, it's also worth highlighting that in all of our markets, we're seeing strong growth. In some markets, you're seeing GDP growth north of 6%. This is driving passenger traffic north of 10%. So in terms of the fundamentals of the business model, it remains strong. And this is one of the cornerstones of why we can grow at the pace that we're growing. Moving on to slide four, I've highlighted the opportunities with the A321s. With the NEOs coming in Jan 19 and the ever stronger balance sheet, we are actively looking at the options for financing those aircraft. So certainly that'll be something that I would be looking at in more detail going forward. I think Joe highlighted the incredibly large order that we did with the aircraft, the price of which we have secured at competitive rates. So in terms of the aircraft, the price paid for those, on the asset side of the equation, I think we've ticked that box and creates a fantastic platform for the next 10 years. On the challenges, Joe's highlighted in terms of labor costs, it's a fair to say that the labor environment is getting tighter, and when you're growing at 25%, that's a significant pressure on the organization. The team's in place, the organizational structure's in place, we are confident that we have no issues going into the summer on that respect, and all the initiatives in terms of the recruitment, the pilot academy, we should be well set going into next year. Looking on to page eight, I think, again, a slide you've all seen before. It's very pleasing to see that there's always going to be headwinds and tailwinds, and our job is to make sure that we deliver very tight cost control. So we've delivered a flat CASK for the third quarter, and going into the fourth quarter, that number will be turning negative. And with the A321 rollouts, we had a bit of a blip going through with depreciation, which I've highlighted. We've gone through that now. As we go into fiscal 19, and I think I highlighted at the half-year results, we should start to see that negative trend returning. So certainly ex-fuel CASK for us remains very tight, and we will start on the downward trajectory as we go into fiscal 19. Moving on to slide five, cash generation remains very strong. Free cash is around about 30.6%. Leverage, this number can change by 0.1 percentage point depending on the rate of the dollar. The balance sheet is very strong. Maybe pushing on to slide 10, just two sort of tweaks onto the guidance. The fuel prices, we've pushed that up from plus 3% to plus 5%, and the growth in terms of capacity was 23%. We've been able to successfully push that up to 24% capacity growth, 25% passenger growth for the full year. The net profits guidance remains unchanged from the first half. With that, I'll pass to Joe to give some flavor on the network and other developments.
So obviously with the influx of new capacity, we continue to build our network. And fairly similarly to the profile of growth what we have delivered, you are seeing the same flowing through the quarter we are reporting here. We put over 80% of the growth capacity on routes or airports which are familiar to us. 56% of the capacity went into increasing frequencies on existing services, and 27% for joining the dots, joining existing airports. But we remain keen on carrying the flag of ULCC and bring the low-cost model to new markets, to new territories. And with that spirit in mind, we continue to open up new airports as well. 17% of that capacity went into new airport. Now, looking at the next slide, slide 12, you can see the expansion in Luton, I must say that this is a step change versus our original plan, pretty much triggered by the Monarch situation. We were able to secure four airport nightstands, enabling us to essentially move the operations from three aircraft to seven aircraft very quickly, already operating through summer 2018. As said, we are expecting Wizz Air UK to be licensed in March, and we're gonna be able to obviously at least to some extent address some of the Brexit concerns with regard to the airline operating model by having essentially two airlines, one in the U.K. and the other in the European Union. I mean, obviously this is the start of a journey. We have robust plans for the future for London Luton, but already with this expansion, we are coming up to 37% market share in London Luton. So we are pretty much tied to number one, number two there. But depending on slot and airport infrastructure availabilities, we remain committed to continue to build our network in Luton. Next slide, 13 is our new venture in Vienna. We are highly excited about this opportunity. Actually, we have been looking at Vienna for a long time, but this was the right moment for getting the right commercial operating platform for actually entering the market. Let's not forget that the geographical proximity of Vienna is very favorable for our core markets. I mean, essentially quite a large number of Hungarians, Slovakians and Czechs are using Vienna Airport as their preferred airport, and we are building on that halo effect obviously, and clearly the consolidation opportunity arising from the failure of Air Berlin and Niki triggered us to essentially enter the market at this time around, and quite a robust entry with 70 new routes and 3 aircraft. And again, this is the start of the journey, and you can expect us to do more in the near future. Moving on to the next slide, we have now a very robust delivery stream of aircraft coming down the line between now and 2026, a total of 281 aircraft to be delivered in this period. You see the detailing of how that actually will get executed, so we are still having a few aircraft of the CEO technology A320s, A321s to be delivered between now and 2019, and already in January 2019 we will start taking delivery of the previously confirmed 110 A321 order stream. You see that flows into 2024. And in 2020, we will start taking deliveries of the new aircraft, what we just confirmed, A320s, A321neos. Now, the A321 is obviously a very significant driver of the business. It is a 10% lower unit cost than the A320, and the NEO technology is adding an additional 10% cost saving to the business. So operating an A321neo aircraft compared to today's A320ceo aircraft gives us 20% unit cost saving, which is very significant, and we make sure that we remain very competitive and very formidable in the marketplace. So just on the 146 aircraft order, this is the largest order the company has ever placed. And we are part of an order, the Indigo portfolio order, over 450 aircraft, which essentially is one of the largest orders in the industry in history. This represents over $17 billion of financial commitment at list price. Obviously, we are buying it at a lower price than list. And strategically, it feeds into our strategic objective to become the ultimate lowest cost producer in the industry in Europe, and certainly this aircraft is going to help us achieve that. Moving on to the next slide, you are seeing the revised fleet plan. Essentially, we are upping capacity compared to what you were presented about 6 months ago. So if you take fiscal 19, we will have a fleet of 112 aircraft compared to 106, what we previously communicated. That pretty much comes on the back of extending a number of aircraft what we planned on returning. But given the market environment and the market opportunities, we decided to retain that capacity and further operate those aircraft in order to be able to supply the demanded capacity. And with that, the fiscal 20 number is now changing to 227 aircraft at the end of the financial year. And you can see below 33% of the capacity will be flown on AC-21 in March. A year later, 43% and 54% in March 2020. So the AC-21 will become the core of the fleet, and I think that's great news because we believe that this aircraft is unbeatable in terms of aircraft economics compared to any other aircraft of any other manufacturers. So with that, I would just recap the presentation. So another strong quarter, taking the 9 months of the financial year to a total of 303 million euros net profit. We are quite encouraged by forward bookings, what we are seeing, especially for Easter. We are upping capacity plan and the passenger growth plan. We expect to deliver 25% growth on passengers with 30 million pax in the financial year. Very significant expansions in London and Vienna, resulting from consolidation opportunities. We continue to invest into infrastructure and assets. We secured aircraft orders, which will serve us for quite a while with regard to the growth requirements of the business. But also we want to make sure that we control our own destiny when it comes to crewing those aircraft. And by institutionalizing the Wizz Pilot Academy, we make sure that we don't remain just totally dependent on the market, but actually we can also produce our own pilots. Our balance sheet has become stronger. Quite a lot of liquidity has been created over the past year, and as said, this growth will continue to take place, and we are just in front of our major delivery program, which will start on the 1st of March, when we'll take delivery of 17 aircraft over 17 weeks, which is fairly unprecedented, not only for Wizz, but probably for the whole industry. But we remain very excited about the growth opportunities and the robustness of the model to actually deliver financial performance while we are growing the business 20%+. Thank you.
Operator, maybe we can open up to Q&A, please.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now. If you wish to withdraw your question, you may do so by pressing 02 to cancel. And there will be a brief pause whilst any questions are being registered. And our first question comes from the line of Christopher Combe from JP Morgan. Please go ahead, Christopher. Your line is now open.
Good morning, guys. Just two questions for me. I saw a press interview quote this morning stating that you expect no material changes in fares in FY19. I just wanted to ask if we should read that as your sort of first take on RASK guidance for next year. And in light of that, could you give us some sense of how you expect unit costs to develop in light of DNA normalization and the rising share of A321s? Thanks.
Okay. Yes, indeed. We don't necessarily see a dramatic change in the fare environment. I mean, you are seeing different factors affecting the fare environment. One is certainly a very robust macroeconomic context of our markets, as Ian already commented on. We are seeing some of our markets, with GDP growth over 6%, but even the slowest growing market is more than 3%. So it's very strong economic sentiment overall. We are seeing a rising fuel price, which, you know, based on empirical evidence, rising input costs tend to feed through into the fare environment over time, but that's a longer term process, so it can take 12 to 18 months, so it's sort of pushing fares up. We are also seeing you know, some capacity consolidation resulting from failures of airlines, and obviously that also helps improve the fare environment, but at the same time you are also seeing actually the backfilling of that capacity fairly quickly by airlines, including ourselves. Based on these factors, I don't think that is going to be a material change. Maybe there is some upside to unit revenue, but it's not going to be mind-blowing. And if you look at the cost performance of the business, we expect to benefit from the A321 rollout, definitely. I mean, you know, this is going to affect over 10% of our capacity. So if you take 10% gain on 10% of your capacity, this is already giving you a company-wide 1% cost saving. That is headwind, and actually a number of headwinds. You know, on labor cost, I mean, you are seeing very clear labor cost inflation across Europe, and some particular workforces are even more affected, like pilots. But clearly, unemployment rates are down everywhere, and as a result, minimum salaries are increased by governments, especially in Central and Eastern Europe, and we are seeing, you know, somewhere in the range of 5 to 10%. Wage inflation in Central and Eastern Europe, and we are not immune. So we need to react to those market forces, and we need to make adjustments. And also, you have the fuel cost question: how fuel goes, and we are expecting fuel to rise at some extent. But we think that we are overall in good position with the A321 rollout. So certainly, we would expect ex-fuel cost performance to be flat, slightly negative, but overall cost probably is gonna grow slightly because of the fuel component of that. But we're seeing that the revenue upside will be sufficient to offset that. So overall, we expect a fairly similar trading environment in terms of margin performance.
That's clear. Thanks. And just one last question: when we look to the order book, can you talk about the incremental benefits of ownership, how that may impact D&A and the finance costs on the margin going forward?
Yeah, I can take that one. I think if you look at the as you know, all of our aircraft are currently leased on operating leases, and the embedded financing charge on those can range from anywhere from today 3-4% to 7-8% on the older leases. So essentially, if you compare that to issuing a bond, I won't give indicative prices. You can see in the market what they're trading at, but you can certainly see there's a couple of percentage points, certainly on existing leasing deals. So by removing the lessor, we will certainly be benefiting. I think it's probably worth highlighting on that point, IFRS 16. I think it's a hot topic. It's not something we're going to be adopting as of the 1st of April 2018. We've done the analysis. It doesn't really move the needle for Wizz Air. In terms of the numbers, so I wouldn't expect any big issues coming out of that. But I think what's important is that the IFRS 16 will split out the ownership costs in terms of asset prices and depreciation. So the great deal that we've just done with Airbus, you'll see nice trends of depreciation, certainly for the long term. And then on the interest line, that will obviously be below EBIT in the interest and the funding costs. So you'll see the existing funding costs. And so when the, you know, whether it's on balance sheet financing or even better lease prices, you'll start to see an improving trend. So IFRS 16 as a topic is actually quite helpful in giving a bit more transparency in terms of ownership costs and funding costs. So I think you know, I would model that. The timing, though, Chris, I think you need to look a bit beyond. I mean, the first A320, the NEOs is Jan 19. You know, that we still need to be convinced of buying. There's the question on residual value. We're confident the aircraft are going to perform. They're in the air now, and the performance we see is excellent. So we're happy they're coming. But in terms of the next 12 months, it's not something I would put in your models. It's something more for fiscal 20.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Damian Burrow from RBC. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Good morning, everybody. Two questions from me, too. First of all, in terms of Q3 trading, obviously slightly breathtaking to grow 24% and see unit revenues flat, almost slightly up. But within that, is there anything in the mix that you could call out as being particularly exceptional or weaker, and any feelings for what the reasons for that is and how that changes the way you evolve your growth strategy in terms of where you put the growth for this summer? And then the second question, and I'll give them to you all at once, is just, you know, looking at your growth rate, when you've looked at other businesses that have grown at this faster rate, what have you learned from them in order to sort of avoid the pitfalls of any sort of overgrowth or overtrading that we've seen in companies in the past? So you could just tell us, you know, what you think the risks are there and how you've addressed them. Thank you.
Okay, with regard to QC trading, I don't think there are big miracles there. Simply we try to master operational excellence and sort of roll that out on a bigger scale. You know, many of the things has become sort of a factory in our case. I mean, if you look at it, I mean, we are operating across 28 bases in 16 countries. I mean, we know how to enter a new jurisdiction. We know how to set up a new base. We know how to scale those operations. So I think the operating model is very intact and very well tested already. I mean, one of the challenges obviously is that we are seeing plenty of growth opportunities, but we don't want to overgrow the business. So I mean, you know, I could even argue that, you know, we deliver 25%, but probably we could have delivered 35% growth as well if you kind of derive growth from market opportunities. But at the same time, you know, you want to make sure that you actually can execute and you don't dilute the operating model of the airline. So we have been filtering these opportunities, and as a matter of fact, that forced us to review, you know, the business maybe more rigorously than before. And we have been eliminating underperforming capacity. We have been eliminating underperforming bases. We have announced the closure of a number of small bases that we set up, you know, a number of years back, just couldn't drive it to an extent that, you know, they would classify as, say, scalable, good businesses with good prospect for the future. So we took sort of the hard decisions on those in order to make sure that, you know, we spring capacity where we really have compelling opportunities. So I think we have been moving that kind of a portfolio to some extent. But other than that, I think we've just been very focused on the on the USEC principles, and we continue to stick to those principles. In terms of learnings, I think it remains very important to us that we build a diversified portfolio of markets, and we are further diversifying our business. Like 13, 14 years ago, we were totally reliant on two markets, Poland and Hungary, and we were quite vulnerable to external shocks, competitive incursions, and all those sort of matters. Then we started diversifying across Central and Eastern Europe, and I think we've got to another level of diversification now that, you know, given the rising opportunities from consolidation in Western Europe on a very select basis, and somewhat opportunistically, I would say, you know, we are entering the Western European markets. Does it represent any shift from strategy? Not at all. We remain focused and totally committed to Central and Eastern Europe, and I would be expecting going forward that the overwhelming majority of the growth will be deployed in actually Central and Eastern Europe. But, you know, as we are a sizable airline and we have built significant presence in Western Europe as well. I mean, we are one of the largest airlines in London Luton. We are the largest airline in a number of Western European airports. Obviously, we ought to look at those opportunities as they arise from consolidation. But also, we are very keen on doing more further east. 5 years ago, Israel was an untouchable market because of regulatory constraints. Now we are the largest international airline in the country, operating to three airports. So as those windows open up, we want to be there, and we want to carry the flag there as well. So I think you may expect us to do more in the east. You may expect us to do more in the west in the future. But the core will remain unchanged, and we will be focused on Central and Eastern Europe. So I think the diversification matter is certainly a lesson. And the other lesson is that we can push growth from a commercial perspective, but we need to take into account our capacity, to execute that growth from an operational perspective. And we're seeing that we probably got to the point now with this level of growth on a continuous basis. I mean, we have been delivering 20%+ growth for 3 years now. That probably this is how far we can go. And rather than further stretching ourselves operationally, we might have to be a bit more selective on the growth opportunities and also more rigorous on reviewing the underperforming part of the business.
Okay, thank you. And just the Q3 tradings, any particular areas that were better or weaker than average?
No, I think Joe's point, I mean, it was fairly consistent across the board. I think December in particular, I would say there were some operational challenges. So Joe highlighted conditions. I mean, Luton was shut for an entire day. We cancelled 77 flights. So essentially in Q3, we had nearly four times the amount of cancellations that we had in the Q3 fiscal 17. But in terms from a trading environment, no, I think, on the back of a strong summer, that sort of continued going through. It was pretty much in line with what we expected.
Okay, very clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of James Hollins from Exane. Please go ahead, James. Your line is now open.
Many thanks. Good morning. Two quick ones for me. Just I saw a couple of quotes this morning, which, to be clear, I haven't read. But can you just give us some clarification on how active you are on the Alitalia auction, whether you've put in an offer or in tandem with someone else, and also how that would work for you? I think the one headline I did read is you're not interested in long haul, which is obviously a good idea. The second one is your best unit cost performance was also your largest ex-fuel cost line, airport handling on route charges. So wondering if you could just let us know if there's any particular detail on why that was much better. Is it just scale, better airport deals? Am I missing something maybe on Forex? Thank you.
Well, I mean, Alitalia is more smoke than fire. I mean, simply, Italy is a significant market for us. Actually, it is the second largest Western European market for Wizz Air, so we ought to understand what's going on in Italy. We are very interested in the Italian market, but not necessarily in Italian airlines. But given that there is this process with Alitalia, we simply just want to understand the process and to see whether there are any opportunities resulting from that. But we have concluded nothing, so don't worry or don't get overexcited on that. But I mean, certainly, we have zero interest in anything which is a long haul operation. We are a short haul airline, flying point to point. It's a low cost model, and we are sticking to the ULCC principles, as I said. So we only have interest in that model and the Wizz Air operating platform. But I mean, you've seen a number of examples recently, like our ability to take over slots and airport stands from Monarch. You saw other airlines, taking certain assets over from failed businesses. So simply, we just want to understand, what's happening or what could happen, and we want to position ourselves for that. But that's it.
And on the cost side of the equation, I think what's important to factor in is that we have levers in our business essentially to manage costs. So where we see pressure on a particular line item, whether it's labour costs or depreciation, we have the levers and the tools in the organisation to move. So in the case of airports, we always have a very strict policy in terms of making sure that if you go to an expensive airport, that's more than offset by a cheaper airport. And these are managing the mix and optimizing that mix can help you essentially deliver your cost performance. And it requires discipline. It's very easy to chase for expensive airports and chase yield, but that's not our business model. So if you look through our cost performance on all line items, there are levers in that. Next year, moving into places like into Vienna, Frankfurt, this may be an area where we'd be investing a little bit, but there will need to be other other line items that can essentially relieve that pressure. So I think when you look at our overall cost performance, I wouldn't point to a particular deal or a particular volume. And I'd also add scale as well. I mean, I think as the bigger you get, the more volumes you get, the more passengers through an airport you get, that certainly comes through. So the economies of scale come through. The A321 itself doesn't actually benefit because that's on a per pax rather than the aircraft itself, but there are things like turnaround. So you certainly do see a little bit of benefit coming through on the A321 from that. But again, I think the way you should look at our cost base is not sort of single out a particular line item. You know, we monitor and we look, track trends, and if there is pressure on a particular area, the rest of the organization will need to absorb it in some form or another.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Now, our next question comes from the line of Mark Simpson from Goodbody. Please go ahead, Mark. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Yeah, morning. A couple of questions. Just want to kind of understand the guidance for the year in terms of the implied Q4 loss of 23 mil. You've got an Easter effect, which is a positive this year. I don't know if you could kind of give us a kind of quantification of how that sort of falls into the period, so plus 10, plus 15 million maybe. And then that obviously suggests you've got, you know, greater costs coming in elsewhere. So I wonder if you can actually break that down, particularly on the gearing up cost for the delivery of 17 aircraft over the Q1. So just understanding that Q4 loss that's implied in your guidance. And then just a question kind of Brexit related. Obviously, getting closer to the booking windows opening for post-Brexit sales. What terms and conditions will there be in the small print in your ticket sales post that March 2019 period?
Okay, maybe I can take the guidance question. I mean, at a high level, there's no dark clouds on the horizon. I think that's what I would flag. I think what I would also say is that, again, if you've had a very strong platform of the first half, you're going to grow faster. I mean, the first week of January, as an example, we grew 31% in terms of capacity. These are months traditionally that you actually lose money. And I think this is fundamental to our business model. I mean, if you track back 12 months ago, where we were in a slightly different situation within market conditions, you can sit there and feel sorry for yourself, or you can grow through that and then have future benefit coming through into the summer. So if you can scale back a little bit in Q4 and you can add a couple of million to your profitability, that's very easy. It's manageable. But you're then sacrificing the profitability going through to the summer. I think if you track back to January last year, you know, harsh operational conditions can deliver a 5 million negative fairly easily, and we saw that in December. We still have 2 months ahead of us. So I think fuel prices are slightly higher. I think the dollar is sort of washing that, but I would say there's a little bit of headwind coming through from the dollar. You know, and taking 17 aircraft in 17 weeks, the lead time in terms of pilot recruitment, I mean, that's essentially started back in October and before that. So there's a lot of, you know, the training centers are working 24/7, and, you know, opening up new bases as well where these aircraft are going to be going are adding some costs. Wizz Air UK, as an example, will require some additional investment. The Class 1 transactions that we've just concluded, that will require a little bit of extra cost. So I think the general message is we've had a very strong platform. There's no dark clouds on the horizon. You know, and I think going forward, you know, the pace of growth that we are pushing, I think it's sensible to leave the numbers as they are.
Okay, but
in terms of, sorry, just to interrupt there, Joseph, but just in terms of the assessed Easter positive effect, what number do you put on that?
I wouldn't say that. Essentially, it's half an Easter. So maybe if you go back to, there's always a bit of a sort of left pocket, right pocket in terms of the Easter. It means you may have a slightly weaker February, so I wouldn't put a number on it. But if you go back to last year, it's around about half an Easter that you have this year.
Okay, with regard to Brexit, I mean, you know, we are pretty active in the UK, and to a large extent, this is all related to Brexit, but also some of the things have their own merit. Well, we are setting up Wizz Air UK. I mean, that's an important contingency. I mean, simply we don't know how Brexit is going to play out, but we want to make sure that, you know, we are planning for various scenarios, and we're seeing that we position ourselves properly with having a UK airline as well as a European airline to deal with the situation. We remain very upbeat on London especially. I mean, in 2017, we were growing 11% on passengers. and in 2018 we are growing 23% on capacity. So actually we are upping our capacity plan in London, but we believe that essentially in difficult circumstances and you know Brexit could result in difficult circumstances for the industry, lowest cost will prevail and win. And we're seeing that you know this is the position we should be taking in the UK and be ready for the situation and depending on how events unfold, you know we could respond and we could react to those events. In March 2019, at the start of the summer schedule, we'll have around 20% of our capacity designated to the UK.
But in terms of terms and conditions, small print in the sales. Any comment you can give us on that?
No, I mean, you know, we are fairly transparent. I mean, if we run a good business, then we grow that business. If we don't run a good business, we shrink that business, and we grow the business in London. That suggests that we are in good business.
Alrighty. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask an audio question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. And our next question comes from the line of Rushika Sajani from Barclays. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi there. Good morning. I just wanted to come back to the 17 aircraft in 17 weeks. As you very much said, Joseph, you know, that's an unprecedented rate of delivery for you know both yourselves and the industry. Can you maybe just talk around how you're managing the execution risk associated with you know that program and what contingencies you have you know, in place for you know the unexpected, effectively? Thank you.
Right. I think the largest execution risk is the availability of crew. For the aircraft. I mean, these 17 aircraft are spread across our network. I mean, again, you know, we have a system of 28 operating bases across 16 countries, and this is really a spread deployment that helps us recruit cabin crew and pilots and train them up to standard, as opposed to doing it in bulk in one place. So I think just the sheer diversification of the delivery program helps us mitigate the execution risk. You know, we've already secured those workforces. I mean, you know, the typical pilot training program is six months prior to operations. Typical cabin crew training program is around 3 months. So you know, all the crew needed to actually operate the aircraft are in place already, and they are under training. And you know, we continuously monitor headcount, and so far so good. So we are very confident that this is going to get delivered. And let's not forget that some of the other aspects of an airline operation, like aircraft maintenance, which is another very significant operating factor, is an outsourced activity to Lufthansa, and Lufthansa is a large-scale organization with good degree of diversification, and essentially we kind of outsource the execution risk, but we just want to make sure that you know it is also a blue-chip company who actually can deal with such kind of an execution, and Lufthansa has been proving itself a very reliable and very scalable partner when it comes to supporting our expansion.
Maybe to add there, I think, and it's actually touching on Mark's question earlier in terms of the ramp up. I mean, we need to have all of these crew essentially before the aircraft arrives, so there'll be a couple of months where there'll be, I would say, a little bit of extra capacity, but of course you have to pay for pilots. So in terms of the sort of slight cost creep, this is, I would say, there's a longer training period, so that's where there's a few hundred thousand per month which you'll be accruing of additional cost, but also the pilots are on your books before those aircraft are being delivered. So that sort of gives you a little bit of a flavour of why you know, why you're seeing a little bit of increase going into March, April time.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Monique Gollard from Citi. Please go ahead, Monique. Your line is now open.
Morning, everyone. Just a couple of questions from me on the revenue environment, if I may. The first question on ticket revenues. Obviously, we saw ticket revenues up 1.4% in the quarter. I was just wondering if you could give a comment on the yield environment currently in the context of you know, rising fuel prices and you know some of the weaker likely unhedged competitors you have in the region. And then the second question was just on the ancillaries. Ian, you were saying that value added and through revenue per passenger up 2 euros, but bags a drag at negative 2.6. Maybe if you could just give a flavor of some of those value add ancillary revenues and, you know, what more you think you can do to offset some of that weakness from baggage.
Sure, maybe I'll start on the ancillary number. We introduced a suite of products, essentially obviously geared to how to compensate, so whether it's the priority boarding or tweaking those products. So I would say certainly the seating continues to improve, but we believe there's a lot further to go on the seating. I think in terms of the baggage products, I think we were very nice when we introduced the policy, and I think it takes a little bit of education, certainly for our ground handlers and our passengers to understand what they should be checking in, what they should be paying for, what they can be bringing to the gate. Essentially, the last thing we want is to have to put 100 bags at the gate into the hold. So I think in terms of the bag fees, we need to do more work. We are doing more work, and that will be refined, and certainly in terms of the implementation of that policy, but also refinements to make sure that we can start to see a reversal of that trend, which unfortunately has been going on now for a couple of years, but not for us, but for the entire industry. I think in terms of the revenue environment, I would categorize it as constructive. Fuel prices that are rising are not a bad thing. I think someone highlighted that we're exposed as an airline a bit more than others, given our very low cost base. We have a higher proportion of fuel. Ultra-low cost airlines don't mind high fuel prices. In fact, you have a lot of airlines that are actually starting to wobble now. And if there's sustained higher fuel prices, it gives us opportunities to increase market share just simply by people disappearing off the face of the planet, which is nice from time to time. So I think I would categorize the revenue environment as constructive. If you look at a chart we present, I think, last May, back then we were contributing 16% of the seat capacity to our markets. This year we're going to be doing 27% of the seat capacity. So certainly we're a much larger feature in that. That does bring a certain element of pricing power, and also seeing our competition, whether it's challenges on crewing aircraft or whether it's simply higher fuel prices, the environment is constructive. There's still a lot of capacity coming to the market, and I think what's also very helpful is that in some of our markets, the demand is growing by north of 10%. So the markets themselves are absorbing the capacity, so that certainly gives a lifeline to some of the weaker competitors. The higher fuel prices will certainly start to have an impact. We've seen it trickle down the past couple of days, so who knows where the fuel price will go. Generally speaking, I would say that the revenue environment is constructive, and that's why we're growing at the pace that we're growing.
Okay, very clear. Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Andrew Lobbenberg from HSBC. Please go ahead, Andrew. Your line is now open.
Hi, Joseph. Hi, Ian. Can I just ask about crewing? You've been very clear that you're in good shape for this summer and into the future, that the Wizz Pilot Academy will be a good source of first officers, and that's clear. But how confident are you about the ability to source captains? Because obviously when we look across at Ryanair, it's the experienced captains which are particularly sought after. And as you grow very quickly, you need as many captains as first officers. A second question would relate to the tax rate, no? And as you grow in the UK and as you set up Wizz Air UK, should we be imagining that your corporate tax rate remains at the current Swiss-oriented level, or will that face upward pressure? And just a third question, fairly straightforwardly, are you able to tell us what your UK ownership is on the share register? Thanks.
Okay, let's start with crewing. If you look at the kind of the dynamics, the organizational dynamics of the pilot force, so we are basing our strategy on three pillars. So to develop our own cadets through the flight academy program, then to make sure that first officers are trained through properly to become ready to captain and promotable to captain, and then to retain the captain force, which is the most experienced part of the organization. So we are very confident that the cadet program, the Swiss Pilot Academy, and our genuine recruitment efforts will source the necessary number and necessary quality of pilots for this. And we have a good system in place that trains up first officers to captain level fairly quickly. I mean, let's not forget that, you know, we are an airline with full productivity, so we are getting very close to 900 hours. So, you know, approaching any standards for captains takes us much much shorter period of time than in case of our or most of our competitors. And then we are very focused on retaining the captain. So I would be expecting that probably we can source two-thirds of our captain requirements in-house internally, you know, based on promotion from within, and we would be reliant on the market probably in the magnitude of 30%. Maybe we can do a little better than that, but I don't think we won't do worse than that. We have not had issues with finding the necessary and the right number of pilots what we need. I mean, we haven't been canceling for, you know, unavailability of crew, unlike some of our competitors, and we are fairly confident that, you know, this program is going to take us where we need to do. Now, it will come with some salary inflation, some pay inflation, and we are addressing that. So clearly we need to move with the market. That helps managing attrition on the one hand, but also makes us attractive when we recruit for pilots. So that's the strategy, and looking at it for 2018 and early 2019, you know, where we have visibility, we're seeing that strategy works. It's going to cost us some money in terms of pay inflation, but all in all, we will remain very competitive in the marketplace, and we can secure the necessary resources needed to operate the airline, given the high growth rate of the business.
I mean, I'll take it from there. I mean, I think the other thing to bear in mind is that Wizz Air is a place that people want to work for. Clearly, we need to make sure we're competitive in terms of pricing, but it's a very attractive proposition as an organisation to work for. We have a great culture, and people like working for Wizz Air. On to the tax rate, I think, Andrew, it's a safe assumption with Wizz UK as that business grows. Yes, the UK tax is going to be slightly higher than the Swiss tax rate, so in terms of your models, you can assume that number will be growing. In the early years, I mean, putting a magnitude, you're looking at nearly 350 people based in Luton in a fairly short period of time. So the startup cost, the initial costs, a lot of the routes will be new, so they'll be in their early years. So certainly for the short term, you know, 1 or 2 years, that number won't start to creep up, but certainly that's something I would put in your models for the later years. The UK ownership at 29%.
Lovely, thanks.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, once again, if you do wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now. And there will be further brief pause whilst any remaining questions are being registered. And as there seem to be no more questions, I now hand back to you, speakers.
Great. Thanks, everybody, for your time. Q3 tends to be slightly quieter. I think they were pretty solid numbers. Pleased to report today. And we'll be back on the telephone lines with our full year results coming out in May. So thanks, everybody, for your time. And any questions, don't hesitate to contact myself or Bannett from the IR team.
This now concludes our conference call. Thank you all for attending. You may now disconnect your lines.